So tonight, I wanted to talk about, I can't remember what I titled this in the newsletter. It was like practice when you have less structure would be a good way to phrase it. Now, people's lives are very different, but for many of us, whether we like it or not, the late December holidays mean changes in our usual schedules and routines. So what that usually means, like what's helpful for us, not just in terms of our Zen practice, but in terms of, exercise and good eating habits and all kinds of other things, is, is structure, is it's kind of routine, and we do things at certain times, or we go to classes, or we go to the Zen center, or we build these habits to help support what it is that we want to do. But then there's times, and even if you're fine, even if for you the holiday, this holiday, Christian holiday segment here isn't particularly like your life doesn't change that much, it's still there's still maybe times in your life where things do change, right? You go on vacation, you have family visit, or another classic one might be retirement, right? Some kind of shift in your life where there is less, significantly less structure. What do you do with yourself? Once again, I forgot to log into my BrightWay Zen email account to pull up my shared screen, but I'll do that in a moment. So, oh yes, let's do it. Because I wanted to ask y'all, what would you like to maintain in terms of your practice, even through times of less structure? Sometimes it helps get the juices flowing to just have a shared list. All right. So, what would you like to maintain in terms of your practice, even through times with less structure? Feel free to just raise your hand in the Zendo or on Zoom. You can either just speak up or use the raise hand feature under reactions. Dave.
So, I'm coming at this in a slightly different way because my life is generally not structured. And in light of some of your recent talks, I've been thinking about trying to get structure. So I would put in daily practice is because that's something that I'm going to try and do to get some structure, but in the midst of chaos.
And do you mean Zazen?
Yes. Rather than, because getting up in the morning at different times and this and that, crazy things, but I think that's sort of a goal of mine in the midst of the chaos is to try and at least to do that every day.
I mean, think of, now you have family coming to visit, or you're going to visit family, or whatever. Like, is there anything that you try to maintain, or you just kind of go?
I would like to have gratitude every day.
Tyler.
I try to add in those little like daily zazen is I do, but I find that sometimes I'm like really sneaking it in when I've got, like, we have guests come every, these holidays, like really sneaking it in where I can every day, but it's not the same sort of, but where I do find time is doing the, like, the little, I always have to find like those little, the little prayers you can do after washing your hands, like moments where you're by yourself. And even if it's just, you know, you get to, you can escape from your uncle and just go and wash your, you know, do the, wash your hands and take a moment and just say, do that, and sort of sneak those things in quiet moments by yourself. And it just sort of grounds you again back into your practice as you head back into the maybe chaos of family or whatever.
Do you have an example of one of those off the top of your head?
Not off. I always have to relook. Well, what was the, the one I do, you did it when you're, Zen Studies podcast things, the evening prayer. Now of course I say it every night. Now it's you. I was thinking.
Yeah, about, I was just trying to think, you know, because some people may not be familiar with these little verses, but there's like a verse you can say when you're brushing your teeth.
Yeah, that's, yeah. I got that.
There's a verse you can say before you eat. There's all kinds of different little, tied to little tasks that you do each day, which they've never worked for me because I just forget to do them. I'm just like, oh yeah, I meant to do that thing. But for some people, it's a really nice way to insert little bits of mindfulness in. Bob.
I just try to remember the precepts. They get a little bit of a strain, a stress this time of year.
So I did want to find out, like, what kind of things do help you maintain your practice, but let's talk about that later. I am going to want to do small groups for about 10 minutes, asking when things change and you have less structure in your life or your routine changes significantly, is there anything you found that helps you maintain a thread of practice? But I want to be clear that there's different ways we speak about practice. And a lot of times the first thing we think of is formal practice. Formal practice meaning it has a form, right? You can see it. You can see you go sit zazen, you know, you come to the zendo, the dirt zendo or the cloud zendo, or you do some reading, or you say a verse or something. It has some form to it. But most of our practice, of course, is formless in the sense that it's not so obvious. It's really about our own state of mind. It's how we meet each moment. So some of you heard me say this before, but practice is about what choices can you make in this moment to decrease suffering, increase peace of mind, wisdom, and compassion. So these kinds of times that we're facing is where the rubber meets the road, right? It really tests our practice. We will have hopefully done a fair amount of formal practice to kind of give us a nice grounding and build up some good habits. Sometimes I feel like, you know, we've banked some zazen and now we're going to spend it, you know, like we're going to see how long it lasts. And, you know, then we can return to our habits at some point. But sometimes it's like hopefully you will have found over time in practice that you do have a little more of a reserve of how different ways to describe it, maybe equanimity, a little bit more mindfulness, a little bit more clarity, a little less reactivity, or something that you just because of regular practice, because you've kind of worked on your spiritual health, you're healthier when you go into these periods where there is less less form and less structure. So it's really this moment by moment experience, which every single thing we encounter, everything can be done with a mind of practice. You know, having a beer with your family can be done with a mind of practice. You know, playing with kids, boredom. You know, I have confessed before, and I try not to show it, but like I can only take so much socializing, and then I get really bored. And I try not to show it, right? I'm usually with people that I love, and I don't want it to be insulting. I'm glad that I am with them, but you know, it's kind of the nature of holidays and visits and stuff, right? That you, if you don't see people very often, now it's like, now let's see each other for 24/7 for, you know, a week. And, you know, and it's like, I can't be at my best or most attentive for that length of time. So even just, you know, sitting with those kinds of feelings, recognizing those kinds of feelings can be part of the practice, right? As soon as we, you know, I sit here and I think, okay, feeling bored, you know, and then that I notice that I don't have to act that out. I can then think, well, you know, enduring boredom is my gift to my loved ones right now. You know, I want to be with them. I want to demonstrate that I care. And so this is what I'm doing for them right now. So there's ways that we can shift the way that we think, the way that we relate to the situation, which can, you know, relieve a little bit of suffering, open it up a little bit, open up more possibilities. But I do want to talk more about ways that we can keep the thread of practice going, no matter what is going on in our life, you know, particularly in these kinds of less structured, you know, highly social times. So be thinking about that, because we'll go into small groups and chat about that a little bit. But I did want to do a little visit of some of the things that may happen over the course when just our usual routine shifts. And I don't mean to say that like holidays or vacations or retirement or anything like this are bad, right? There's many great things about them. But it also makes sense that these are the times when we actually want to be the most present that we can be, that we want to, you know, be the best we can be and appreciate these times and be really present with the people in our life. I guess I can stop sharing my screen for the time being. Loneliness. You know, for some of us, the holidays are going to be full of people, almost too many people. But for some people, that's not the case. And you know, I don't know, it's in contrast, it's societal expectations or something, but there can be a sense of loneliness. There can be a sense of dullness, of just, I don't know, I certainly end up feeling that way. Like sometimes after 3 or 4 days of this kind of routine, I just kind of feel like a zombie. I mean, I'm like, don't really feel like doing anything. There can be a loss of a sense of purpose, aimlessness, restlessness, boredom. And boredom is really a profound, like, I feel like boredom is almost the purest form of dukkha, of dissatisfactoriness. It's like there's no reason really to be unhappy or dissatisfied. It's just just like, I want something else. Laziness, failure to, which I'd like to define as failure to apply what is wholesome, what we know to be wholesome, right? We know that we shouldn't eat that much or sleep that much or drink that much or whatever. We know what is wholesome, but then we just find ourselves not applying it. Backsliding into bad habits, spending more time than we want to in mindless distractions like scrolling Facebook endlessly. And then, of course, irritation with people, depression. I don't know. I don't mean to be like a downer, but did people, anybody want to pipe in with other things that not so great things that happened to them during these kinds of times? Tyler?
Yeah, one thing my partner and I always discuss about is how when, again, we're out of town and so our family comes to visit us because we dared leave and have grandchildren. And so they come visit us every holiday. And so they, but we find we slide back into old relationships with our parents where all of a sudden, like, we feel like we're 16 again, or they view us like we're still the 16-year-old self. And it's, we all of a sudden we're like, God, why do, like, what happened? It was just really weird that we fall back into these old relationships despite years of therapy or whatever we've done to try to, like, not. But yeah, that's a tough one for us.
Yeah, thank you. That definitely. Jinryu.
I just wanted to point out that in the chat, some people have made some wonderful suggestions, and perhaps they want to remain in the background. So maybe I should not point them out, but I would
Of us in the Dirt Zendo can't see the chat. So yeah. If you don't mind, we'd love to hear.
I would love to hear the Green Tara Mantra. I don't know what that is, but I know that that's important to one of our Sangha members in the cloud. And then someone else mentioned, if I can now find it, I can't, the end of day gata, which is the one I always ask you to do, Domio, because you do it so well. But it's not one that I would reach for, even though I think the message is very important. But, that's really for the dark and cold days of winter, that gata for me. But it's important to somebody else.
Is that the let me respectfully remind you?
That was the one I was trying to remember, but all of a sudden was like, I don't remember it, but that's what I do every night now.
Oh, that's you, Tara. Okay.
Since I heard it on Domio's recent podcast, I fell in love with it. And I don't know why, it connected with me so deeply.
But let me respectfully remind you, life and death are of supreme importance. Life swiftly passes and opportunity is lost. Each of us should strive to awaken, take heed. Do not squander your life.
And then you pull your black hood over your head and leave the room. Blow the candles out and leave the room. But there's, if someone would feel interested in sharing the Green Tara Mantra, I would love to hear that. But I'll leave it at that.
Om Tara Tu Tara Turi Saha. Does it have a tune, Paulette?
No, I'm sorry. I was just finishing my dinner. It's Om Tare Tu Tare Turiye Soha.
And would you remind us who Green Tara is?
The female Buddha of compassion.
Sweet. That's a nice short one that you could just cite in any good time.
In a jam.
Yeah. So any other like challenges that we haven't discussed?
I think it's just all the family dynamics. I mean, my kids come and there's always been I think.
Can cloud people hear?
What?
Will you come sit up here so people can hear you? I know.
I just think it's family dynamics, you know, when my two daughters come, there's all that stuff from childhood. And I think with my late husband, there was just a lot of defensiveness. And so it's still that sometimes. And so I've been thinking, I took this improv class, which was not me at all, but in improv, you just say yes to everything. And I'm thinking, that's a good thing. But, you know, they like to criticize me. They like to want to try to make me better. I'm just going to work on saying yes and just accept it. Just that family dynamic stuff that never goes away, like Tyler said.
Yeah.
I try not to be a mom, but.
I mean, people in, you know, relationship karma is probably like the, I don't know. It's the one of the various hardest things to work with, I suppose, because other people are involved, right? It's not something we can all just do in our heads. I mean, we can let go and process things as much as we can, but then there's still the other person. And there's also the fact that, I mean, I really noticed this when I was first practicing. And you can even see it within sanghas as people get to know each other over time, that we just get an idea of who somebody is. Mm-hmm. And we cannot see how they have changed. Like, we just, and they can't see how we've changed. And it can be very, very frustrating, right? Like, you've worked hard, you've let go, and they're just like, it seemed to get no credit for that. Mm-hmm. But it's, yeah. So, I mean, in some ways, you know, we can help ourselves by just giving ourselves a break, that this is like some of the most long lasting, resilient stuff. And that sense of, I mean, thank God, my parents are so cool. They have grown up and let go, and they don't give me a hard time. Although I do live 2,000 miles away from them. Like, you know, if I had the grandkids like my sister does, you know, I don't know, might be different, but
where do they live?
They live in Minnesota. So, like, but they, you know, they, I give them credit though, because they have let go, and they don't, because it, you know, all they have to do, they just have to go, you know, and you know the judgment that's in there, you know it. Like, just as though they've got really good at it. So I'm pretty free right now of family that does that, but I know that it can be very powerful. Ran.
Well, I first of all wanted to comment on the idea that, you know, you're totally free when you retire. What I've found is the only thing that's different is now I'm the one that determines the structure of my day, and that's a great blessing to not to be belittled in any way, but as far as the, you know, the practices and such, so I'm just starting to try to reignite a practice, you know, right now, and you know, I'm still going to do the Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the Tuesday. I guess I'll miss some Sundays or something like that, but I don't know that a lot of that will change. But, you know, for the holidays, it's celebrating of all other things will go mostly to my wife's family members and so forth, which is, you know, all in-laws for me. You know, the test for me is to be open to the widely differing political views that get expressed in family gatherings. And, you know, they can be so entirely different. And, but I've really just kind of recently gotten to the point where I just pretty much disengage from that, because there are some of them that's like, oh, if you go to Rand, he will definitely give you some arguments back and he will engage with you and he'll, you know, and one of them was even like he'd study up on his facts and everything so he could bring it to me and everything. And after a while, I just got to where I had to say, no, I'm just, you know, that I'm glad that you have your opinions and that you feel strongly about them. And, you know, you do with them what you will. They just, but I don't want to go there right now. And, but then there's also ubiquitous drinking in these gatherings. And I don't partake of alcohol of any kind. And the conversation, as you said, definitely relate to the fact that it gets quite boring, very shallow, very repetitive, very quickly. And, you know, and so I kind of like, I make the rounds and make my hellos and be, you know, kind with everyone for a while. Now my wife understands. I will do that for a certain amount of time, and then I will find a place off to myself and I bring a book. So there, that's, you know, it's just my way of dealing with it sometimes, because, you know, it's been doing this for a long time. And one of the things that comes with, I'm 70 years old, is however much time I've got left in this world, I want to make it count now much more than ever. And I'm very aware of the of things just being a waste and a waste of time. Mm-hmm. So I very much like to make things count a lot. So I've got certain patience because it's just something that you have to do, but then I'm not yielding my sovereignty to make decisions for myself. I'm not going to let everyone else make their decisions about what I do. That's what retirement is to me determining what I want to do.
Yeah, you point out, I mean, it can be such a tricky road to walk, right? I mean, we hear that, you know, in terms of other views and stuff, that we shouldn't, that, you know, silence can seem like, what do I want to say? That you're condoning, right? Or that you're, so somebody says something that's really egregious, you know, whether we manage to say something or not, we probably feel like we should call something out and say, you know, that's complete lie or that's racist or whatever. But on the other hand, you know, in these circumstances, are we going to make any difference?
That's the question. It's just like you have to ask yourself, you know, if you ever see any signs that your view is being listened to, and I try to show that I understand what they're saying and that I understand their point of view, I don't get that back. And, you know, when it comes to that, then I feel like, okay, well, then this is just a waste of time. And again, I'm not going to waste my time. Yeah.
And that is like that. I think it's been a big lesson for me, like kind of like I was saying about the boredom, like how much it, I mean, because everybody's different. Like some people just, you know, love having family around and love socializing or whatever. But, you know, for many of us, it's like we are demonstrating with our bodies by showing up that we care. And I feel like that's like 90% of it. You know, even if we, as long as we're not rude, right? We just show up and endure. Because sometimes I feel a little bad that I'm not bringing my full self, you know? I'm not, my real authentic self and what I really care about or my passion, it's just, I don't know, it's stayed in my luggage, you know, like, it's not, so I feel sometimes a little bit, like, inauthentic, maybe, or like, I'm withholding a little bit, and yet, you know, at some point, gotta ask, well, I'm doing the best that I can. At some point, I recognize that was something, I don't know if you relate to it or not, but I really recognized how often I would tell myself that I wasn't doing my best. And yet, upon some reflection, I recognized, well, that was your best. Like, it's not, I wasn't fulfilling my ideals, right? I wasn't fulfilling kind of what I hope for or what I know is possible. But really, given in that particular circumstance, whatever it was, that was my best. So it's also some, I don't know, self-compassion and acceptance about our limitations.
I definitely feel freed from the opinions of others. I don't much, kowtow to that particular thing. But like you say, you know, make the rounds and let everyone know that, you know, you appreciate them and you speak with them and so forth and so on. But, you know, I don't need to hear about what they think the football team's doing here and this, that, and they don't need to hear what I'm thinking about because they're not going to follow it anyhow. I got a question for you though. In these family gatherings, there are, and this is the deep red Tennessee South, and good number of the people before meal and everything else, they'll pause for, you know, a Christian prayer, you know, and this also happens at association gatherings, just everywhere. It's like everyone just assumes, yes, you will. And so, you know, I bow my head like everyone else and stay quiet. But I just wonder, you know, I sometimes wonder about coming forth and just saying, well, why do you assume that everyone in this room wants to hear that, you know, partake?
Yeah, and that's that occasionally the people do want a gift of authenticity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sometimes you can't help it, I guess.
John.
Yeah, well, sometimes I'm a little contrary, but I love family gatherings. And I agree they can be boring. The same things play out. There could be arguments. There could be whatever. But I just don't get to see my family that often. And so I just enjoy it, whatever comes. And some of the things that I kind of think of while we're doing this, you know, beings are numberless. I vow to free them, right? I mean, you can take some opportunities there to sort of work some things in there, get some skillful means. There's a lot of koans here that people can deal with, right? I mean, you could probably identify a bunch of koans of what we talk through, but it to me, it's just a lot of fun. The more I learn, like even different Buddhist lists, like, watching greed, hate, and delusion play out, the four Brahma Viharas, you can just practice with any of those things. And see, the more I learn, the more interesting things are. And I can just sit back and watch things. You can bring people, you kind of isolate people and try and connect with each one of them. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't work, but there's just a lot of challenges. So I just want to throw that in there. But I mean, maybe I'm lucky. I just got a great family, but I just enjoy every minute of it. You know, right. Even if I got to play a drinking game or something like that, whatever. Take one for the team, right?
Yeah, and the precepts, as Bob mentioned, are a great. They're a great thing to keep in mind in the holidays. The precepts are all about relationship.
Right. I mean, even the Eightfold Path, right? There's lots of things you could play with there. I will say that, you know, I get that people, like, you know, Christians, do their prayer and they, you know, sort of force that on you. But there's a sort of a mapping from the Eightfold Path to a lot of the lessons from the Bible. So there's a lot of parallels there too. So I can get into whatever people are throwing out. And sometimes I might challenge them. They want to bring a message. I'll play with them. Life is fun. It's like a divine play. Just have fun with it.
Erica.
Oh, Del Neal.
Oh yes, Ruthann.
I appreciate all this wisdom. And luckily, I'm at the age where I'm invited and people go through the effort of checking with me, picking me up. And I don't think I entertain boredom, but I do get to sometime in the evening as the dynamic is shifting, I think, oh, I'd rather be home with my book right now. But then I try not to show that and realize, as I think Mary said earlier, just gratitude, because this event I'm witnessing, enjoying, could be different a week from now or a year from now, and especially being around young adults and then the generational, their parents. But I remember when I was younger in a family, my in-laws, if the one person prone to running the show, I would think, oh, this is a bad script. I wouldn't pay to be in this theater. But here I am, just, you know, kind of take it in. I'll finish with Pema Chodron. Early on in one of her workshops, talked about being in a small boat. The other two people were arguing with each other. She couldn't leave. And she just said, go to your breath, you know, just be the indifferent witness, not judging, and just be in the moment. That's all you can do. So thank you for this topic. And just, I think you said earlier, be gentle with ourselves.
Thank you, Ruth Ann. Erica.
I think that family gatherings are really good time to reflect on like the transient nature of life, the ever-changing nature of life. I don't think I really, appreciated that until I became a mom. And I was like, oh my gosh, every year, like they were different. The kids are different. Mm. You know, it was feels like yesterday I was a kid at the kids' table. And now I have kids, and I think a lot about my grandmothers, you know, at family gatherings and how they used to, you know, just handle everything. And I didn't really appreciate it. I was just kind of like, oh yeah, they made all this food and cooked and clean, and they're running around and they never sit down. And like, that's totally cool, you know? And now I'm the one doing that. It's a lot of work. So I appreciate it a lot more now. So just, it really makes me think about, yeah, just how everything changes, and it's a lot faster than you think it's gonna be.
Thank you. Yeah, and that comment also makes me think about how I used to have a much more limited idea of what intimacy was. And I would say, I would want to have these conversations with my dad, for instance. Like, it was a certain kind of connection and intimacy that I wanted to have with him, and I would be upset that that didn't really work out, and I might try to like steer the conversation in a way and he'd just kind of brush me off or something. But at some point I just, you know, because this is what we do in practice, right? Is we just don't believe everything you think, right? What else might be going on here? And at some point I realized that's not what intimacy was about. That intimacy is so like subtle. It's not even something that you can really point at. That you can be intimate with somebody even if you've never, you know, whatever, like talked about all the feelings that you've ever had about each other, and you know, it doesn't have to be explicit. If this person has always been there for you. They've always put food in front of you. You've just experienced a lot together, you know, and I've just began to realize, like, you know, my favorite thing to do is just help my dad with a task. He's just to go in there and we do a task together. And I realized that is so intimate. That is so sweet and intimate, you know? And so I think there's an aspect too, where we have these opportunities then. You know, life is short and ephemeral, and to recognize how much intimacy is really there that we kind of don't appreciate much of the time. Paulette?
I just wanted to make a quick point. Ryan, is he still here?
Hmm?
Point that Rand made. I don't know.
Oh yeah.
I wish I could just take a book and read it. That would be great. That's exactly right down my alley. I think, you know, I'm not able to do that. I think that's a, sort of a nice freedom to be able to, like, you know, sort of go around and say hello to everybody and then, you know, do your own thing. I think that's really gracious that your family allows that. And I never had that freedom. So that's kind of part of the reason why I didn't enjoy those functions, was because I would love to do that. And it was not a possibility.
Well, he was talking about in-laws.
Oh, okay.
It might be a little different when, like, you're center stage. Yeah. Dave.
So I'm in a somewhat different position because, you know, I used to always dread holidays as a younger person. My family never got along. And so by this point in my life, all of my family either dead or gone. I have no family ties whatsoever. And there are two coexisting emotions. One is sort of jealousy of other people that have these things to do. And the other is just intense gratitude that I don't have to do all that stuff.
So say you have to find the middle way.
And they exist in perfect balance. You know, so there's no packing of bags, getting on a plane, or making a trip. I just get up and make my tea. But still, there's that balance, that other emotion sneaks up every once in a while.
Well, you are making me think about, I for some reason I've been thinking lately, maybe it's because my life personally has ramped back up pretty much to pre-pandemic levels of activity. And I just thought about how, like, you know, there was something really nice about lockdown.
Yeah.
I just, I mean, our lives are, most of our lives anyway, are just so busy and so full of decisions and so full of opportunities, which we take on and then we kind of wish we hadn't, because now we have all these obligations, and that just wasn't. Just wasn't an option. And I'm doing all kinds of things now. You know, took my dog to dog training, and we go out to, like, dog parks, and we, you know, like, there's all this stuff which is like, nope, can't go, can't do it. Just, you know, turn on the computer and join some Zoom meetings now and again, and that's about it. So there's a certain kind of joy that comes from just not having all those obligations, but they're a joy as well. We don't have time to do breakout rooms now, so, you know, just feel free to speak up if anybody has anything else they want to say.
I wanted to echo what Dave said. Not all families are that great. And there's a lot of abusive language, a lot of alcohol, abusive behavior in my family history. And on top of that, in fact, my current family, I would say. And on top of that, I was single for a very long time and would go home for Christmas to be with my parents. So my whole perspective on this that we're talking about is related to Christmas because that's my background. But, you know, I finally got to the point where I said, Christmas is just a day. It is purely and simply December the 25th that someone has decided has some very special religious meaning. And on top of that, these days, some incredibly special commercial meaning. And that enabled me to take a step back and not be so attached. And I came to realize, you know, I worked so hard to have the Courier and Ives Christmas and in my family, and I just had to come to the grips with the fact it wasn't going to happen. And to the point that was last made, and I think you were making it as well, Domio, especially when I was working, but even now, it's like everybody, let's have one more lunch before Christmas. Let's do one more thing before Christmas. Let's do this event just before Christmas. And so leading up to the actual holiday, I'm very busy. And so the holiday itself, you know, I actually will not set my alarm. I set my alarm every day because I can't wake up well. I will not set my alarm on Christmas Day. I mean, it is a day of smooth reading, watch a crazy movie that you wouldn't ordinarily watch. And I appreciate that so much. Mm-hmm. And I'm so grateful for my husband, because he sort of has the same attitude to this. So I married the right guy, that's for sure. But, you know, there's good on both sides and there's not so great on both sides. So I'm just coming to appreciate what's really good about where I am.
Well, my husband says he hates holidays because it's just an arbitrary day with really high expectations. Shit. Just setting yourself up for disappointment. Jeannie.
Yeah, I totally relate to Dave. My family is, my birth family is not much, and I don't celebrate anything with them and haven't for most of my life. Those that are still alive, I don't have a relationship with. But my ex-husband, who I had four children with, does all kinds of stuff. And they're very social and very active and very into everything. And I'm still kind of on the pre-pandemic world. Like I loved it too. Like I can't go anywhere. Great. Love it. But they all decided this year last minute that they're getting together and it's in California. And I found myself out of the whole thing. And I thought, I feel really alone and I feel really left out. So I decided, okay, I'm going to fix this. I'm a grown woman. I'm going to get a ticket and I'm going to go down there. It's not that I'm not welcome. It's just that I'm just the quiet one that doesn't do these things. So if I want to go, I have to like really yell, oh, me too, me too. And as I've been trying to arrange it, I'm like, God, I hate this. You know, it's like, who's going to take care of the dog? And it might snow and I've got to get to the airport. And oh, my other daughter is really stressed out because they're all going to criticize her. And I'm talking to her on the phone for, you know, like an hour and she's really upset. And I'm like, oh God, you know, so now I have the two conflicting feelings of like, I feel really alone and lost in the world. And also grateful that I don't have to deal with this. And I'm having both. I have stuck myself squarely in the middle of having both of those things. And I'm thinking, oh my God, what is this? What is this about? I'm both extremely lonely and extremely stressed out. So I don't know if that's a good way to share, but that's where I'm at. And I'm really appreciating hearing everybody else because I can relate on so many different levels.
Well, thank you and good luck.
No, thank you. I need it.
Yeah. So, you know, in the last couple minutes here, I guess I'll give a couple little recommendations. You know, if through this kind of time, you can maintain some kind of zazen practice, I mean, like 5 minutes a day, most days or something like that. I mean, longer, that's great. But sometimes, you know, all bets are off. Even just to, you know, I mean, you've heard me tell this story before perhaps, but I was a really, really, really busy time in my life. And was before we had all these nice, like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday sittings where like, I just have to go. So then I have zazen in my life, which is actually quite nice. I would, at the very end of the day, my husband would be in bed already and I would brush my teeth and then I would close the lid of the toilet and I would sit on the toilet and set a timer and sit zazen for 5 minutes. I was in a room where I wasn't going to be disturbed, and it mattered. It made a difference. It's just a, you know, for even just once a day to kind of come home to yourself, can be really, really valuable. The gathas that that Tyler was mentioning, even if it's just a little ritual you do, even if it's just little mindfulness tasks like. Maybe, you know, eat your meal without reading at the same time, you know, just eat your breakfast without, you know, multitasking or, you know, something like that, or, you know, pick up your tea with both hands and take a short walk outside, or I don't know, do a short chanting service, do a little Dharma reading, attend what's available at the Zen Center, and you know, just kind of set low, reasonable expectations in terms of how long, how involved, but show up whether you feel like it or not. And you know, give yourself permission to relax for X period of time and recognize, you know, this is a test of your practice, right? Dealing with all of this stuff is really going to like to say, people bring out the worst in you. But that's from a Zen practice point of view, that's good, right? That people will show us where we're still, you know, caught in our behavior patterns from childhood, or, you know, resentment or judgment or reactivity, etc. And just, you know, take note. Oh, that's interesting. I mean, you're not always going to be in that circumstance. So just take note. And this is something that can be fodder for practice later on. But give yourself a permission to just relax. And there's a way over time you can, if you practice over the course of years, and we don't running out of time, so we won't be able to hear if other people have this experience, but if you've built up the habit of practice strongly enough and you kind of let it slide for a while, a really natural process of dissatisfaction builds up over time. Of just, you just like, just kind of disgust with yourself and like, just, you know, a craving for a little more just equanimity and, you know, things making a little more sense and just, you know, I imagine the same, you know, works with exercise and other healthy habits, right? So we can kind of count on, you know, that we don't have to worry too much about holding tight to it because we know how important this is to us. And you know, when things start to fall apart, we'll have renewed vigor for the new year. And I guess my top recommendation is just when necessary, let go of judgment and regret about your practice, whether that's in terms of the formal aspects or your moment by moment mindfulness. This be with this, right? This is what is happening, wholehearted, and try to engage wholeheartedly and mindfully with whatever is happening. You know, even if we don't like it, even if we're having reactions to it, to just try to be as present as possible. And that is, really is practice. So happy holidays. And I hope sincerely that all of you have some relaxation and some wonderful connections with people and whatever it is that feeds your heart. We offer the merit of this Sangha meeting to all so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
Thank you.
Thank you. That's great.
Thank you, Danielle. It was great.
Thank you.
Happy solstice tomorrow, everyone.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Thank you, Tyler. And happy holidays to everyone.
The days will get longer.
Thank you.